Hey, everybody. In this episode of Being Unapologetically Authentic, Elizabeth Niddle joins me, and Elizabeth is a transformation coach, a licensed esthetician, a healer, and self-care expert. She is passionate about whole body wellness and helping women create their dream lives, one new habit at a time. And so I am so excited to have Elizabeth on as she shares her personal journey through authenticity and success with us today. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here. It's so nice to see you again.
You too. You too. And I apologize for the little bit technical difficulties in the beginning. But yes, yeah, so we were quickly chatting about the new options that I can look into with regards to Podbean and the recording. So thank you for your patience. So let's get started with this recording and, well, we were already recording, but let's get started with sharing with the audience a little bit about you.
Okay. Well, I'm just so grateful to be here and excited. And it's so funny because when your podcast just resonates with me so strongly. But I used to, the woman that I am today is not the woman that I always was. I was raised in South Georgia, if you notice the accent, and that's, where I live today. I've moved away and come back, but, I went through quite a bumpy, from 18 to about 30, I really struggled. And then again, until 36. So for 18 years, I battled bulimia and alcoholism. And everything that I did was in secret. And I was always hiding something. And it really overtook every area of my life and really destroyed a lot of my all of my relationships with my family. And I was in and out of college, and my life just didn't look like what I thought it was going to look like. And not only that, but I just lived in trapped in these diseases that were addictions that seemed like it was me making these ugly, terrible choices over and over, when truthfully, like, I really couldn't stop, and it was the scariest thing. So when I was 27, I managed to sort of pull it together enough to fall in love and get married. And we were living in Atlanta, where we knew no one, and I got pregnant after we'd been married for about a year. And but there was some things going on with my body where it made me feel like I didn't know if I was pregnant or if I was, if the baby was okay. And so we just had just moved there. It was really bad during the recession. I think it was like 2009. And we just sort of picked a doctor out of the healthcare program without doing any research, which I don't recommend ever doing that. And so we went to a doctor, and they couldn't find a heartbeat. It was a terrible experience. And they just told me that I was going to just bleed it out. And like, we had waited there for like 4 hours. And so that really caused this like emotional upheaval in me. And being in my addictions for so long, when I had found out that I might be pregnant, the desire to drink was really lifted from my body. And I was very protective. You know, all of a sudden I saw my body as not my own. But that situation caused such stress and anxiety that I used to get relief from binging and purging. So I went and to the store and secretly, you know, bought a bunch of binge food and started to eat. And I didn't even want to eat it. It just, I wanted when you do that for a really long period of time and you throw up, like, there's like a release of endorphins and dopamine, and that's what I was seeking, is that numbness and that, right, you know, relief. And so, but I started eating, and I was in the car in Atlanta, which is huge. And all of a sudden, this like white light just was in my car. And not only was it in my car, but it like entered my body, and it like went in through my feet and up my legs and up like through my torso. And it was the most warm, comforting, secure, loving feeling that I've ever felt. And it was like what I had been seeking without knowing that's what I was seeking. Right. And it just filled me up. And I audibly heard, "Elizabeth, you don't have to live like this anymore." And I was like, what? And then as soon as it was there, it was gone. And it just went out the top of my head and out the sunroof. And I was just kind of in shock. And I like was looking around at other cars like, did you see that? Did anyone see that?
That's so funny. I was like looking around like, wait, did anybody see?
Well, yeah, like, was that real? But I had this like, it didn't scare me. It was just because I had this peace all of a sudden that I hadn't had since I could ever remember. And I got out, like threw away all the binge food, kept down what I had eaten, which was a freaking miracle at that time. And the obsession with food was removed. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, do you think it was removed because of the energy that moved through your body, or do you think it was removed because of the choice that you made at that time, that the feeling that the food and the binging gave you just wasn't what you like, it wasn't the replacement that you were looking for that true connection with the energy?
Well, it was definitely more of the first, because I had tried and cried and begged God to, you know, help me quit, like make me stop, like I just turn it over, I surrendered over and over and over. But I think the vulnerability that I had with the pregnancy allowed for where I had such walls built up around me, and really a protection and numbness, like it was very difficult for any sort of energy to enter into my heart.
Right.
If that makes
sense. Yep. Makes a whole lot of sense.
And so it put me into like a different state, which allowed for me to have this spiritual experience that I knew was bigger than me. And I've always believed in God and didn't really know how to have a personal relationship with God, or, and that's what I call my higher power. Some people spirit or source or whatever. I've always just said God. So, I knew that that's what it was. It wasn't just me, you know, I didn't just create it. It wasn't of me. It was bigger than me. It was bigger than anything in this world. Like,
yeah.
So, I like was real kind of tentative and nervous about it. And going through my pregnancy, I just kept being in disbelief that the obsession wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course I gained an absurd amount of weight, and I was really terrified that it was going to come back once I, had my baby, and he was fine, had him. And he's healthy.
Congrats. That's awesome. And this is the second pregnancy after the first.
No,
it's the same one. Oh, okay. So it was the same one. So even though, so that's really interesting then, because you had gone to the doctor's office. They had said that they couldn't find the heartbeat, but then it's the baby was still.
Yes. Okay. And then like, I ended up another total God thing, running into, I was at the like if anybody is familiar with Atlanta, I was on in the, I'm a big nerd. I was in the library on Ponce, which is this really ghetto library. And, but I'm, I just like libraries. And so, so I was there and a girl that I had grown up with, came in and I saw her and I just ran up to her and I was like, Brooke, I think I'm pregnant, but I don't know. I need an OBGYN. And she gave me the name of hers. And we went to the doctor the next week and there was a heartbeat. And
oh my goodness. Fine. That's amazing. That's amazing.
So definitely take recommendations, get recommendations. Don't just take a doctor out of the, you know, insurance book. Know what you're getting into.
Yes. But that's kind of scary, right? Like something so basic as identifying the baby's heartbeat, you would think that the doctor would be able to do. So, but that's amazing that you were able to find a qualified doctor to help you.
Yes, it was. It put me in such a vulnerable state that I think I was open. I was, you know, allowing. I was able to receive
right.
instead of being in such a masculine energy of making things happen all the time. I was just really in my feminine energy, which I didn't know what that was at the time. But looking back, and when I share my story, you know, I can see the patterns of when I have had experiences like that, because it's not been my only one now at this time. And they come when I'm in a space when I'm just more open.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple kids and I nursed. And so for a while I wasn't drinking, the eating disorder was gone. Then I started drinking again after I quit nursing. And I mean, I'm just, I come from a family history of alcoholics that are in recovery. So that's great. You know, so I had good influence, although at the time when I didn't want to admit that I was an alcoholic, I mean, that was really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing, you know, my family dealing with me.
Right.
And because who wants to see anybody going through that? I know that I just know that seeing it is so difficult because I have seen it and there's nothing you can do until the person is
ready, right?
Yeah. To change.
And I think that's such an important part because in your bio, you're also a healer as well. And I think that's like fundamental of being a healer, like first and foremost, right? Is that you can be the support all you can, but you can only be there and you can't really force anybody to do anything until they're ready to do it. And I think that that's such an important part of this healing process is that you have to personally be ready.
Absolutely. And ethically as a healer, you know, I don't do any work without the person's consent, but you're right. You're not going to miracles happen. I mean, miracles really do, but you have to be in an energetic state where you're ready to receive the miracle. And that I think is difficult to understand because I just, you know, cried on my knees, just please take it. But I really didn't know how to shift that from the place of just desperate and lack and pain and hurting to the willingness to truly open up my heart.
Yeah. And so once you were able to experience what it felt like to open up your heart, how did that change your path forward? What did you discover about yourself? And I'm sure it's opened up multiple new opportunities for you that has brought you a lot of success. So can you share with us some of those things that have happened since then, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah. So, well, the thing about it is, you know, it wasn't all unicorns and roses from there because I still had a drinking problem. And so until, so once I started drinking again, it became very obvious to me and, you know, to my husband at the time that I had a drinking problem, because I just wouldn't quit. Like, we would have drinks with friends or dinner or something, but like I would keep drinking and until we went to bed. And I wasn't like waking up drinking or anything at that time, but like it was a problem. And right. So and I had a lot of guilt and shame and the emotions that tend to go along with a true drinking problem. Mm-hmm. And so I quit when I was 30, and that was a really big life change, and it created a big, when you get sober, it changes everything. If mm-hmm. you really do the inner work, and it's really hard on a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting divorced, and then kept living life, and that's when like doors started opening. So I started working. I became an entrepreneur, not even on purpose. I had a mentor ask me. I'm an esthetician, so I do. Like before I was a coach and I'm an esthetician and I still have a studio. Mm-hmm. So I do skincare, mostly like chemical peels and waxing and things like that. And I had somebody approach me and say, I want you to work with me. I don't want you to work for me. I'm going to teach you to have your own business.
That's amazing.
And at the same time, one of my other mentors that was helping me really with my sobriety owned a business where she helped women entrepreneurs open up their businesses mm-hmm. and showed them how to do it legally and how to get your EIN and mm-hmm. you know, separating your you know, opening a business account and all the different like everything was really. Like, I had two amazingly strong women who knew exactly what they were doing, mm-hmm. holding my hands and walking me into entrepreneurship, which was just a shot. You know, I just was like, I never thought I would have my own business.
Right. And that was probably like the last thing on your mind, right? As you were going through some of the challenges that you mentioned with bulimia and alcoholism, et cetera, I think opening up your own business probably wasn't at the top of your priority list.
I was a stay-at-home mom, and I loved the being a stay-at-home mom. My kids were young then, and but I was, you know, my marriage wasn't working, and so I was excited because I'd always loved skincare, and I studied nutrition in college trying to fix my eating disorder. So like the body and anatomy and chemistry all was very fascinating to me. Right. So that really started, it like up-leveled my journey through self-care mm-hmm. and really learning that I had to take care of myself mm-hmm. Before, because I was, you know, taking care of clients all day and then taking care of the kids at night. And I knew that I had to do things like I had to run. I had to do my own like skincare regimen.
Right.
And I had to meet with other people that were like-minded. And I had to schedule in time for myself so that I could be the best version of myself that mm-hmm. and was able to pour into them.
Right.
Unfortunately, I had a slip that turned into a fall, and my because of my history with addictions, I needed to go. I couldn't quit drinking again, like mm-hmm. on my own. So I needed to go into rehab, and when I did that, I got my custody papers, and it was a mess. And like. I had to sell my car to pay for rehab. I lost my house. I lost everything.
Wow. Wow.
And it was just, I lived in a state of shock for, I don't know, probably about a week or 2 weeks. And this level of pain that I can't describe, because my children had never been away from me for a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just terrified, and I didn't know how I could really go on breathing or living, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember, I would lay there in bed and say the Serenity Prayer and just accept, like, try to get out of the shame,
mm-hmm.
and to try to move forward. And I've just never felt so alone, but then also so connected to God in my, you know, because I knew that he was real. He had been present. I had been, you know, and so I just slowly learned how to survive, and mm-hmm. then how I started to come into my identity, and I finally got peace, knowing that everything was going to work out. It was going to be okay, but I had to take care of myself. I had to put the oxygen mask on me before
first,
I could worry
yeah.
about writing any guest emails or doing anything like that. So, that was huge. And so I got very, you know, really developed my really spiritual relationship, and I really threw myself into service of others.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody
mm-hmm.
needed anything, then I was just there. And
right.
So that was a tremendous time of growth where anytime I needed something, like I needed somewhere to live, like the right thing came up, the right people came into my life. I mean, I was just rebuilding, and
right.
but it wasn't that I was, and this is the part of what I do with my clients, is it's not that I'm like rebuilding my old life. It's that it was the start of something new.
Well, it almost sounds like your old life had to be all just shattered before, so that you could start to rebuild your new life. Everything that you had known was pretty much challenged, right? And then at that point, you had a choice of whether you were going to stay in victim mode, which you clearly didn't, or you were going to put that trust in the universe. And continue to allow yourself to be vulnerable and allow yourself to receive, which is kind of what you were saying, which I think is what you were saying before too, right? In terms of like when you needed it, when it was that time where you required assistance or support of some sort, the universe came through and put the right people in your path, which I think is so amazing, because I think so often, like you were saying, we're so used to being in masculine mode. We're so used to thinking that we're the only ones who can support ourselves, when in reality, there's so much support out there for us. It's just whether or not we're going to be open to it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think our culture really teaches us to be in masculine mode. And a lot of people don't realize it, but even when you're a parent, like when you're if you're a stay-at-home mom, like, you're in your masculine mode. You are taking care of those kids. You're solution-oriented.
Yeah.
You know, that's you're getting things done, getting things accomplished. That is, which is important. And everybody has feminine and masculine, their divine feminine and divine masculine inside of them. And the importance of it is to really maintain a balance, especially if you're going to be in a really healthy relationship,
right?
Where you, and that was something that I learned when I started to, you know, finally, eventually started to date, because I had always been in masculine mode in my relationships, and I realized that like it was so much better and more fun, and if I got to just sit back and not make all the decisions and not be in charge and receive. And that was really new to me.
Yeah, it's new to a lot. And it's scary because it's something that I'm working through myself as well. And it can be a very scary process when you really don't have any control over a situation whatsoever. So I think, Elizabeth, you know, one of the things too is that, you know, you went through all of these life challenges, right? And I think one of the biggest takeaways that I'm getting from this conversation is that you're so strong. And one thing I'm so impressed with you or by you with is the fact that you didn't allow yourself to be a victim, because so often you would hear stories like yours, but it would turn out differently because they, you know, it's easier to put the blame onto other people, right? You had alcoholics in the family, so they could have put the blame on, you know, of what you were growing up with. You had an ex-husband who was clearly not that supportive, especially when you were going through rehab, and, you know, that could have taken a different turn. So one thing, you know, I'd love to hear more of is, how did you take yourself out of that victim mentality, that woe is me mentality, and how did you come up for air to see yourself in a different way, to allow yourself to be, you know, to be strong and to start to do things differently than what you were shown in the past?
What a great question. And I will say there was definitely periods of time where I felt like a victim, but I was working with, you know, so many women, and they really don't let you stay in that victim mentality because nothing is getting accomplished. And I wanted to change my life. So everything was changing. It was just one of those things, like everything had to change, was changing. Whereas sometimes, like when I got sober and when I turned 30, like I went back into the same environment. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really hard and really stressful, because all of a sudden I was the part of the engine trying to go the other way. And that was just almost impossible. And it was very just tumultuous, I think.
Yeah. And it was easier to go back to like the old ways in that situation, right?
Exactly. And so I really knew in my heart of hearts that, you know, I had a problem with alcohol. I could never drink again. And that was okay. Like, and the fact that, you know, I don't know if you know the Serenity Prayer, but it was just a lifesaver. And it's just accept the things you cannot change, which is the past. Mm-hmm. And then all the other nouns. So people, places, things, and ideas, you can't change those. You have no power over any of that and what people say or what people think. All you have control over is you and your thoughts and your beliefs and your actions and your reactions.
And one of the things one of the words that just came to me too is acceptance, right? Because it's the acceptance of what you cannot change, which is part of the Serenity Prayer, or maybe the core of the Serenity Prayer. And I think one thing too, and this comes up and it's come up a lot, even in my prior, with my prior guest in the last episode as well, is this concept that is such an important aspect of our society today, is I feel like acceptance has kind of left the door, or, you know, like stepped outside for a little bit, and people are more about controlling, right? Like controlling thoughts, controlling people's behaviors. And so I think that is such an important reminder right now in our day-to-day life as well, is that, look, we don't have to be a victim to our surroundings. We can make the change. We have that choice. But more importantly, we have to accept everyone around us that cannot change, the rules that are implemented that cannot change, right? And then we do what we can on ourselves and, you know, within our space to make the changes that we want to see, or to be the change that we want to see.
Absolutely. And with acceptance, I mean, that brings peace and serenity. And when you have peace, then it's easy to walk through any situation. You're not, you know, you're not like red hot. You're not in that hurt victim, like crying, overly sensitive. And the thing is, I'm an empath. And so my whole life, I have been, you know, I feel not just my feelings, but all the feelings in the room that everybody, and I was unaware of that.
I was just going to ask you, did you know that when you were growing up, when you were dealing with the alcoholism in your family, like, did you realize that?
Amazing. I had no idea. I just know you know, like my dad would always be like, stop being so sensitive. And I would cry, and I, you know, I'd cry at church. I would cry. I would cry. I cried at my cousin's graduation when he was a senior. And I think I was in like second grade, and like, it made no sense. That I cried. And I just bawled my eyes out, like couldn't stop crying. And I can, I will, like, I can hear graduation songs and start crying because I know somebody out there's life is changing. And so, but that's been a huge lesson too, is learning to really protect my energy, know where my energy ends and other people's begins, and that I have the power and the ability to put that protection around myself and set intentions. And sometimes, because I hate going to the grocery store, because all you can, if I'm not careful, if I don't do it, then I'm like walking down the aisle, all of a sudden I'm mad, and I'm like, why am I mad? It's not me, it's somebody who just walked by me that's mad, and I'm like, okay, that's not yours, let that go.
Return it back to sender.
Protect me, you know, and then I go in and I try to like knock it out with a mission. But it's just, it's been such an interesting, wild journey, and it's just becoming spiritually conscious also. Because I had a relationship with God, but I didn't realize how in touch we truly could.
So it's so interesting too. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's so interesting because what struck me right now is that you mentioned that you always have had a relationship with God. But what struck me was also that during that period of time before you became aware of this, you were always asking for that, right? And I think, and you can let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm almost sensing that it's like because it didn't show up the way that you thought it would, that you didn't think you were connected. But now you realize that everything kind of came through because of your connection with God. Like he stepped in at the right time with the right people, with the right support, and getting you to where you are today.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if I hadn't gone through the things that I had to the level that I did, then I wouldn't probably be doing the work that I'm doing.
Right.
Because it had such a strong, like it, you know, I got to the point where I literally lost everything.
Right.
I never imagined, that I would be that person.
Yeah.
And one of, my favorite quotes, and I just pulled it up so I won't mess it up. It's Steve Jobs, his quote on connecting the dots, and it says, you can't connect the dots looking forward.
Right.
You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down and has made all the difference in my life. And today I can look back at my life and just be so grateful for the experiences I had, because they really shaped such a strong woman who's able to heal and serve others, because I know the pain, I know the trauma, and and through it, I've just gotten like gifts of intuitive healing.
And that's amazing.
And it's funny, I was with a girl last night and she's like, I just don't know how you know. And I was like, I don't know how I know it either. It's just, I just ask God, I just pray, and then I, you know, I just do my work.
That's so funny. Yeah. When I work with the, yes, exactly. They're like, well, you know, I call it the no BS factor. And I love that part about the intuitive aspect of coaching, because we just cut through the BS so much faster. Do you know what I mean? To get to the core. So I totally get what it is that you're saying. And there was something else that I wanted to share, and now I forgot because I can be a little airheaded sometimes, but go on, Elizabeth.
Well, I think that one of the most interesting things, and it's really one of the most challenging things, but it's so true, is that, you know, God doesn't make accidental humans. We are all here for a reason, for a purpose, and we all have our own life experiences.
Yeah.
Nobody's are better or worse or good or bad or right or wrong. Everybody just has these opportunities and growth and things that they're here to do and to learn. And oh my goodness, I kind of just forgot.
You're probably picking up my airheadedness moment, my brain fart moment. But I actually did remember what I was going to say. What I was actually going to share is that you are like that. You embody so much of self-empowerment, of lessons in life, right? And what I think also is so key that's coming through this conversation is that so often you see people that struggle with with purpose. What is my purpose? What is my purpose? And when people go through these challenges, these life lessons, and these low points in their lives, right? They may think that it doesn't have a purpose, or that they don't have a purpose. And I think that that's not true. And this is what your story embodies as well, is that every little step within your life, there was a purpose. And so you have found a bigger purpose in terms of stepping in and sharing your message and helping others trust more in terms of receiving and connection with the universe, with God, etc. But you know, this probably wasn't your purpose, right? At the times that you were going through it, your purpose was going through it with survival, but survival is a purpose as well. So we don't all need to know what the bigger purpose is. It comes together at the end, just like it has for you.
Exactly. And that's what, when I really started to have even bigger spiritual experiences where God just would send me message. I would get these intuitive knowings of situations or things. And so then I started to work with some spiritual coaches and leaders, and they kept telling me that the answers were inside me. And I was like,
yes, that is so important. I know, because we're just like, what? You're not going to tell me what the answer is, right? Because we're so used to that too. Like, give me the answer. But no, it's always inside.
You're wrong. But it's so true. And that's the thing about coaching, really, is when you find a coach, like, yes, everybody has their methods and their, their outlines and their strategy, right? But the strategy ultimately should be leading you back into you. Mm-hmm. And so that it is, even if you're doing it with a bunch of people, which I personally really like to work only in small, intimate containers so that I get to develop a relationship with each of my clients, mm-hmm. and everybody feels seen and loved and heard by me.
Which is so important too.
But make sure that that coach is really leading you back to you, because, you know, nobody else has your answers.
Yep.
Your answers are unique to you.
I absolutely agree. Elizabeth, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show. This has been such a fun and engaging conversation, and so enlightening. And I love your story, and I'm so honored to have you on here to share your story with our community here. And I'd love for you to share with the community how people can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about working with you. And I also want to, suggest maybe what keeps coming through is your self-empowerment coach. Like, you are all about just showing others. So I love that aspect of you too.
Yes. So I have a Facebook group called the Inspired and Abundant Feminine Collective, and that's for women only. And I would love for you to be a part of that. I'll, Gina, I don't remember if I sent you the links.
But no, send it to me. I'd love to join.
And then I'm really active. I love making Instagram reels. And so on Instagram, I am at run.love.restore. And I also have a website that's www.pureloveandbeautyallspelledout.com.
That's amazing. Yep. So,
but I appreciate that because I actually am leading a masterclass next Thursday called Inspired and Empowered. That's what I want to do, is just inspire and empower other women to realize that they have everything that they need.
That's awesome. And then, so actually the question that I wanted to ask you is, will you run that masterclass again? Because just from the timing of the podcast release, the episode release perspective, it's probably going to be after that. So will they be able to find that masterclass, whether it's a recording, or will you be running it again so they can check either your website or the Facebook group?
Yes, I will be running it. It'll probably, because it is, it's a really great intro into my coaching and everything. So I'll probably be running it about once every month or 6 weeks.
Nice. I'm sure. Very nice.
That they'll be able to hop in. And you can always, if you want to connect, I do have just a 30-minute connection call. And that is available. You can book that through my website or any of my social media. So I love, love, love connecting with people. And I feel like community is so important, and having support systems around you is just huge, especially when you're undergoing a transformation.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And so all of these links and all of Elizabeth's handles for Instagram and her Facebook group link will be included in the show notes, so people can just click and be able to go directly there. And I think until next time, Elizabeth, until we speak again, thank you again for joining me. Today was an amazing conversation. So I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode as much as I have, and that you took away these golden nuggets shared by Elizabeth from her own personal journey. And if you want to work with her, look for her links in the show notes. And until next time, I will see you again. And if you have enjoyed this episode, please make sure you like and subscribe and you follow and you share, so that we can continue to spread the message out there, to empower each other, to support each other, and to build a whole new future that no one's ever built before. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you soon. Bye.